Okay, let's be honest. Most of us are addicted to our phones, and many of us spend far too much time on social media. And this is perhaps especially true for our kids. I'm joined today by pediatrician Dr. Mandy Jackson. She's here to discuss how social media and screen time is affecting our kids and how we can best help them. This is Ask the Experts, the podcast from Salinas Valley Health. I'm Scott Webb. Doctor, it's so nice to have you here today. We're going to talk about how social media affects kids' mental health. So let's just start there. How does social media affect kids' mental health? Do you believe social media is causing a mental health crisis? And really, and I know the answer, my personal answer, but your answer, are kids addicted to their phones and social media?
Thanks, Scott, for inviting me.
Yeah.
I'm finding from more research that we've had that we adults also have an issue with social media. So we'll get there a little bit later. In terms of mental health and addictions, we do have some research studies that show that young people who use more social media are more likely to report depression symptoms. Depression symptoms could be sadness, hopelessness, thoughts of suicide, low self-esteem, not wanting to interact with others. The study couldn't really say if social media caused the depression symptoms, because one thought is that what if a depressed child is more apt to use social media? So there's lots of questions with the research. And the good thing is that we have a lot more researchers right now. And importantly, they're talking with the young people in a very non-judgmental and safe way to get real information to help us all move forward in the healthiest way we can. Like you and I just mentioned, we know our kids are on screens. Think of the last time you were with your child. I mean, I can think of like the last 10 minutes my child was on a screen. So the answer is yes for most of us. Some families, of course, do not let their children engage with screens, or it's just not part of their culture. But the majority of the people, not only in the United States, but around the world, are on a screen. The trick with mental health is to watch at what kind of social media we're using. So there's a lot of inspiring things out there. For example, some kids will use social media just to connect with friends and family in a really healthy way because they're living long distance. Or like my child likes to talk with her cousins who live in Mexico, which is 2,000 miles away.
Yeah.
Show pictures. Or there's certain groups of people who have more self-identity talking with people, like in our culture, the Latinx community, or it could be people who are interested in engineering or gay and lesbians. These things can be very positive. They can use it for education. They can start their own business based on a craft they saw on TikTok, or they can, you know, advertise themselves to mow lawns.
Yeah.
On the flip side, though, there's a lot of dark material out there. Sometimes they're looking at mostly violence, or they're exposed to drugs or precocious sexuality. Actual kids talking about and idealizing thoughts of self-harm and more than that.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in. Yeah. And as you say, many of us adults are guilty, if you will, as well, of just sort of always looking at our screens, staring at our screens, being a bit obsessed with social media, maybe different than our kids. Like, I'm more of a Facebook and X guy, maybe Instagram, whereas I'm sure that my daughter is on more like TikTok and Snapchat. But, you know, as you say, pros and cons, and just wondering what you're seeing in clinic. And do you find that girls are more affected than boys?
I'm seeing quite a few things in the clinic. One thing that is really important, which you just mentioned, is that we adults are on the screens a lot. So for our really young kids, I'm talking like age birth to age 3 years old, if parents are on their phones as much as I am buying plane tickets, for example, they're going to limit their opportunities to directly interact with their kid. And when kids get less face-to-face and facial expression and language interaction, then we already know that they're going to develop language delay or lack of kindergarten readiness. That's a really big thing. I see I have a lot of kids age birth to three who have language delay, and I walk in the clinic room and their parent is on their phone. And I don't say it judgmentally. I'm on my phone when I'm not with somebody also.
Yeah.
But when you're with your child, it's really important to put your phone down and interact with your child. Second thing I see the most is, especially for my teenagers, is regarding time management. So kids are busy. They've got school. They've got to do their homework. A lot of them have sports or music or theater. Some are working in jobs. Some are dating. We're all supposed to hang out with our family. Yeah. We're all supposed to shower. We're all supposed to sleep. And of all those things, I see sleep getting let go the most. Mm-hmm. And we already know that that affects our mental health. If we don't sleep enough, we're more apt to be angry quickly. It can cause us to be anxious and also depressed. When kids are on other social media platforms, which regardless of the time commitment, we're seeing a lot of kids in our clinic with what we call body dysmorphia. It's when they're unhappy with how he or she looks. That definitely affects girls more than boys, but it affects both. Social media tends to portray skinny people and people with perfect skin. Whereas a normal adolescent, I'm talking like 80 out of 100 adolescents are going to have a fluctuating body mass. They're going to have moments where they look overweight, moments when they look too skinny, and a lot of them go through really bad acne.
Yeah.
So when their skin's not perfect and their body mass isn't matching up with what's portrayed on there, I see a lot of kids who are just shying away from any social real-time face-to-face interaction. I'll even see kids in my clinic with their hoodies on and they're there for acne, but they're just covering themselves up. Or
right.
I'll even have kids who aren't eating anything. They actually have anorexia nervosa, and they're covering their bodies up so that their parents will stop telling them to eat. So these pictures and videos on social media, they're very powerful, and we have to help kids interpret that in a real realistic way.
You know, on a more serious note, Doctor, over the years, I think we've learned that many kids have taken their lives due to abuse and bullying, just that they're subjected to by peers on social media or whomever. What are some of the signs that we can look for to hopefully prevent our kids from harming themselves?
That's a really good question, Scott. Really important. It happens quickly, and we're all asking ourselves, what happened? What could we have done?
Yeah.
It's really hard to detect, number one, if we don't have a routine communication with our child. A lot of families are just so busy that there's not a routine check-in. So the number one thing I think we can do to prevent is just to have good communication with our kids. Check in every day. I've been trained to ask open-ended questions, but a lot of times I'll say, how was your day? And I get the answer, fine, or I don't get an answer at all. And I'm like, okay, let me go to my specific questions.
That's all I get is good or fine. How was your day? Good. How was this? Fine. Great. Thanks.
How was school? Fine.
Fine.
And then I'll say, what was the best part? Lunch. What was the worst part? Oh, you know what? I'm really having trouble in math. And then we can have a real conversation.
Right.
And I'll specifically say, how was with Rosa at lunch today? And you know what? She really made me mad, you know. And so you can get a lot of what's going on socially and academically, and all of that affects our self-esteems and our regular mental health. And then if we get any inkling of a problem, we can promptly the next day talk to the school counselor, get them connected with our kid. A lot of times kids will talk to people outside of the home more than they will talk to us.
Right.
As their parents. And then also, of course, at the clinic, we've got referrals to mental health counselors, and some kids actually need medications just to help keep them above water there. It's a really tough thing, but I would say the most important thing is to have really good communication with your child.
Yeah, just wondering what schools and parents can do to keep kids safe when it comes to social media. One thing that my daughter's high school has done now is they take their cell phones away, or they're supposed to anyway. Not all the teachers do, but they're supposed to take their cell phones away when they enter the classroom and give them back to them on their way out. And I don't know that that's so much about social media as it is about just maybe having the kids be able to pay attention and not be distracted, but I'm sure social media is a part of it as well. So what do you recommend?
That's very good question. Some teachers even, it requires your phone just to get your homework done or some
right,
kind of screen.
Right.
And on that, let's say it's a school-provided screen, a lot of kids are, so more than we adults, they're able to get to whatever website they want to without us even knowing about it. So it's really challenging. I would say to help with safety, number one, don't let our kids watch violence. There's violent video games, violent movies, violent TV shows, just to give full confession, my partner and I love to watch narco-trafficking movies at night.
Yeah.
But that can really traumatize a 12-year-old.
Right.
And maybe it's traumatizing me, but it's out there. We need to limit that stuff. Also, yeah. Scary movies, anything with drugs or precocious sexual activity. Those are all safety concerns. And even more, Scott, there's like physical safety. The number one thing I see with teenage drivers is having a problem with traffic. It could be an accident, of course. Mm-hmm. There's, of course, tragic deaths. Sometimes it's just getting pulled over because you didn't go at a red light and the police notices that you're on a phone.
Yep.
Some kids are walking across the street texting and the car will hit them, literally.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, at the clinic and the hospitals, we see the worst things. So there's a lot of safety precautions to do. But the main thing is putting it down for important moments and then watching, like including in the classroom, and then watching the content to avoid those negative triggering exposures.
Yeah. Just wondering, you know, the minimum age is 13 for social media. I feel personally like that should be higher. And I feel like we shouldn't have allowed our daughter access to social media. I feel like a bad parent, you know, maybe for letting her have access earlier. Just wondering, do you think that that should be higher than 13? Should it be 15, 16, 25? What's the right age to begin on social media?
I tell my adolescent kids, if they're ready to have a phone, they're ready to do chores, drive, learn to cook, get a job. It's a hard question. I do think it should be higher, but I think enforcing it is near to impossible for a lot of families. Hmm. Some families are really organized. Maybe yours, Scott, is really organized and supervised. Studies show that 8-year-olds are on social media in an unsupervised way. And some of those kids will get on as 13 and up because an older sibling will let them in, or even a babysitter or parent who doesn't have time or energy to argue.
Yeah.
So it's really tough. But yeah, as I agree, it should be higher. But I think the enforcement of it is going to be up to each household and parent and caregiver. And that is really, really challenging.
Is there an appropriate amount of time that kids should spend on social media? I mean, I confess, doctor, the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning, besides looking at news headlines, as I go to Twitter, or X in this case, right? And I go to Facebook and I go to Instagram. And I'm sure my daughter does the same thing. I'm sure hers is more, you know, TikTok and Snapchat. But is there an appropriate amount of time? Because I feel like I'm on my phone and social media all day, every day. And if I am, then she probably is too. So is there a number we can put on that?
In a perfect world, Scott, we would spend 2 hours or less on what I call recreational screen time. Because there's also productive screen time. So in a perfect world, again, it's more about when and the quality, the content of the social media. So there's good evidence that having what we call a family media plan can really work.
Okay.
So again, it's adults and kids. Everybody's following the same rules. And we invite the kids to help us make the rules. So, for example, everybody puts their phone down for dinner. Everybody puts their phone down when you're going to visit grandma. Mm-hmm. Everybody puts their phone down when there's time for homework, especially for sleep. A lot of families have success when everybody in the family puts their phone in the kitchen, goes to their room, and has uninterrupted sleep. So that's what we call a family media plan.
I like it.
And that helps limit this kind of unlimited opportunity, even though, of course, the goal is 2 hours or less. And it's also very hard to calculate because mm-hmm. kids will be doing their homework on their phone plus TikToking or messaging. And so it's really hard to really delineate how much time is being spent on what.
Yeah.
And then just, again, we need to be role models. So if our kids see us on our phones, just like if we like a certain kind of shoes, they're going to probably copy us. We're speaking English right now. That's because our parents probably taught us English. So we need to model with our phone and screen time also.
Yeah, it does seem like it becomes one of those, well, do as I say, not as I do. But as you say, some of these things are easier said than done, I guess. And I wanted to talk to you about the large migrant community in Monterey County, in particular, South Monterey County, where you work. a lot of families, there's a language barrier. Parents may only speak Spanish or an indigenous language. Like, what's your advice for families? How to handle that when you're mixing all these different languages together, or the kids speak one language at home, but then they go to school and they speak English? Like, help us sort that out.
Very, very challenging, Scott. Really important question. Language tends to cause this perceived power dynamic between the kids and their parents. So let's say a parent speaks Spanish only, or Triqui only, or Triqui in Spanish, and then the kid is learning English at school. Unfortunately, there's some bilingual, bicultural elementary school programs at this point. However, some of the kids will say things to their parents who often have not had a lot of years in school, and they will say things that are not exactly true from school about their screens. You know, I need this to do my homework.
Sure.
And sure, that may be true, it might not be true. So it's really challenging, because we want parents informed and we want them to get professional interactions just like the kids are at school. The biggest thing I see, again, because I'm a pediatrician, is this early preschool language delay thing. So it's really important. And I know that the phones, we talked a little bit about addiction before, parents were also addicted. So these younger kids of migrant families, I'm seeing them not getting a lot of eye contact and facial expressions and, hey, let's go to the park and let's have a play date for a friend.
Yeah.
Because it is so much easier, because we're stressed out with physical labor in the fields, we're tired. And it's just a lot easier to have your child watching a movie, or there's a lot of great cartoons out there that I love to watch myself. So that it just kind of inhibits this face-to-face interaction with facial expressions and real-time language interaction, reading books with kids, going over numbers and letters and colors and shapes that we're getting lost because of the screens. So that's the biggest thing I see. And I don't, there's no judgment or anything. It's just a very natural course of what's going on.
Yeah, it really is. I'm sure all of us just want to be the best parents we can, model the best we can for our kiddos. And as you say, this is an ongoing conversation, an ongoing battle, if you will. But for today, thank you so much.
Thank you too, Scott.
Dr. Mandy Jackson is accepting pediatric patients at Taylor Farms Family Health and Wellness Center in Gonzales. To schedule an appointment, please call 831-675-3601. That's 831-675-3601. And to listen to more of our podcasts, please visit salinasvalleyhealth.com/podcasts. And if you found this podcast to be helpful, please be sure to tell a friend, neighbor, or family member, and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, and check out the entire podcast library for additional topics of interest. This is Ask the Experts from Salinas Valley Health. I'm Scott Webb. Stay well, and we'll talk again next time.